Welcome to another episode of the Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast. Today is Monday, July 11th, 2022. I'm your host, Audrey Sternberg. Doctors Kirk E. Cahill and Sonali M. Smith, both of the Department of Medicine Section of Hematology Oncology at the University of Chicago Medicine Comprehensive Cancer Center in Chicago, Illinois, spoke about their manuscript titled Follicular Lymphoma, A Focus on Current and Emerging Therapies, that was recently published in the journal Oncology. In the review, the authors explore current approaches to the diagnosis and treatment of follicular lymphoma with a focus on emerging investigational therapies and novel combination strategies. Some areas of unmet need they touch on in the paper include precision approaches to treatment, trial endpoints with quality of life measures, and guidance for sequencing of available regimens and agents.
Kirk, thank you so much for taking some time to hop on the podcast to speak with me about your work. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks for having me.
So let's just start at the top. We're going to kind of get into the nitty-gritty of this work in a second. But before we get to that, I wanted to ask you a bit about your thought process and your motivation to, you and your colleague, your motivations to really examine this research titled Follicular Lymphoma, A Focus on Current and Emerging Therapies. Could you kind of just talk a bit about what prompted you to look at this?
Yeah, so it's an area that's changed a lot in the last 5 years as we've learned more about the biology of follicular lymphoma. And it really just started what we saw in clinic and seeing patients together with Dr. Smith and I. And so it was really an opportunity to kind of learn more about the disease, but also think about how the treatment landscape is changing. So that was really a neat opportunity to do that.
Right. And so this review opens up kind of assessing the current standards of treatment, different aspects like diagnosis, testing, treatment selection. For our audience, to kind of give that background, could you briefly overview some of those current aspects that you do talk about?
Yeah. So for follicular lymphoma, it's a B-cell lymphoid neoplasm. And this is a blood cancer that arises from germinal center B-cell lymphocytes. And follicular lymphoma is the most common indolent non-Hodgkin lymphoma and the second most common non-Hodgkin lymphoma overall. And there's a lot of clinical and biologic heterogeneity that exists. And clinically, most patients have a relapsing and remitting course, and they'll live decades with this incurable lymphoma. But there's also a high-risk subset of patients that have early relapse and progression of disease, and that's characterized by a shorter survival. And unfortunately, we're not able to predict who those patients are who are going to have a more aggressive disease at the time of diagnosis. And so when we think about treatment, it's important to think about, keeping in mind that this is an indolent lymphoma. It's not curable. We view it as incurable. So treatment's really aimed at getting patients into a remission. And ultimately, our goals are always prolonging survival and always thinking about quality of life. And a lot of patients, initially when they're diagnosed, can be observed because observation versus upfront treatment doesn't change the overall survival or the overall endpoint. And so the decision of when to treat is equally as important as how to treat, because with these, for the patients who do have a relapsing or remitting course, which is the majority, there's a lot of cumulative toxicity that can come from a lot of these treatments. And so that's just important to think about when we first meet a patient in clinic with newly diagnosed follicular lymphoma, is thinking about indications for treatment, which is based off of the GELF criteria that we use, but also how do we approach them? And I think there's a lot of patient-specific factors and also disease-specific factors that can go into that.
Right, absolutely. And so let's take a deeper look at some of those treatment options. I think it makes up a good amount of this paper. And honestly, if we go through all of the studies and approved things that are in this research, we're going to be here all day. So I'm going to ask you to kind of limit it to the really, the common standard treatment options for first line relapse, in the different forms. So could you just talk a little bit about that therapy selection section that you write about?
Yeah, so this is more so focusing on patients with advanced stage, because patients with stage one, that's truly stage one, and I think it's challenging to sometimes to identify those patients. But for patients truly with stage one disease, radiation, to if it's all within one site, within a radiation field, can have long-term remissions. But for patients with stage two to stage four, advanced stage disease, there's a lot of frontline treatment options for patients. And I would say it's always important to think of, you know, once we know that the patient has follicular lymphoma, we always want to know how much. And then for patients who, again, have an indication for treatment, again, because, you know, 8 to 15% of patients could go their entire, you know, disease course without ever needing treatment. But for the patients who meet criteria for treatment and can come off of observation, the standard frontline treatment options include chemoimmunotherapy, and that's anti-CD20 based therapy with rituximab. So bendamustine and rituximab is the most common, and that's been compared to chemoimmunotherapy, anthracycline-based therapy with R-CHOP, and then also RCVP, and there's improved progression-free survival with bendamustine and rituximab, and also less toxicity. So that's probably the most common one, again, because we're trying to keep in mind minimizing cumulative toxicity with these patients. I mean, it's a well-tolerated therapy, and it's also effective with high response rates up to above 90% and good progression-free survival. And so bendamustine rituximab being the most common. R-CHOP is typically used for patients who we clinically suspect transformation or transformed disease. And then another option is lenalidomide with rituximab, which is similar to chemoimmunotherapy in terms of efficacy. And this is an option for patients who maybe want to avoid cytotoxic chemotherapy or are candidates for that. It's just a little bit longer in terms of the treatment duration. So about a year to a year and a half of treatment. But the lenalidomide is a pill and the rituximab being an infusion. And then for patients who have low tumor burden or maybe are more frail, rituximab is also an effective therapy. Again, the response rate's around 70% for patients treated with rituximab monotherapy. And so there's a lot of options in the frontline, but at the end of the day, it will really come down to the patient who you know, we're talking with in counseling about the risks and the benefits of those, keeping in mind that this is, you know, we can get this disease into a remission early on, but with repeated therapies, you know, that remission time can become shorter and shorter.
Right, absolutely. And I think it was really great for you to give that context on the disease, you know, prior to getting into those treatment options. I think that's really important to discuss. So we talk a little bit about the treatment options that we see now, but what are some of the emerging novel agents or therapeutic options that excite you and your colleague who wrote about this that you think are really going to be options moving forward to treat patients in this space?
Yeah, so there are a lot of emerging therapies, starting with the FDA approved therapies in the last several years. There are multiple, and these are all in the relapse refractory setting. And so when patients have a relapse, first of all, we kind of already touched on the standard frontline therapies, but when patients have a relapse, I think it's always important to emphasize that, again, we treat patients when they have an indication for treatment, again, based on the GELF criteria or NCCN criteria. So observation is still a part of that. Secondly, it's always important to biopsy at the time of relapse to rule out transformation, because that changes the treatment strategy and management of the disease. And then third, it's always important to consider clinical trials, because I think there are a lot of emerging therapies in the relapse refractory setting, but we don't know the optimal sequence of those, and patient selection can be challenging. And we also don't know how those therapies are changing the biology of the disease. So there's a lot of data coming in about the optimal sequencing and how best to treat patients in the relapse refractory setting. And so patients who have early relapse or relapse within 24 months of treatment, those patients are a higher risk subset and have a shorter survival. And urgent therapies really for these patients and how best to treat them are desperately needed. And traditionally, one option has been a consolidative autologous stem cell transplant for patients who get salvage chemoimmunotherapy and have a complete remission to that. But as we've with the development of a lot of these targeted agents and novel therapies that really target the biology of the disease, we were thinking differently about this. And so just because of the response rates that we're seeing for some of these patients and our ability to control the disease, and also not every patient's eligible for a stem cell transplant, and there's a lot that can come with it. So there's always an option to defer that. But for patients also too with late relapse and beyond, this is important to consider because, again, those frontline options of chemoimmunotherapy, rituximab monotherapy, and lenalidomide with rituximab are good options in the relapse refractory setting. But there are also new FDA-approved therapies, starting with the PI3 kinase inhibitors. And the first was idelalisib in 2014, and copanlisib and duvelisib, and then umbralisib here in 2021. Which was the most recent one, targeting the B cell signaling pathway through PI3 kinase inhibition, and then also tezometastat, an EZH2 inhibitor. So these are really the FDA approved therapies that are available, but there's also a lot of emerging therapies that are being studied, and a lot of this comes with a lot of the heterogeneity, both within the biology of the disease of follicular lymphoma and being able to identify targets. And some of those include cell survival and epigenetic targeting, trying to incorporate venetoclax and build on that. Unfortunately, venetoclax monotherapy has largely been unsuccessful. And so really trying to target that, because the translocation 1418 with BCL2 overexpression is such a common feature that occurs in this disease. So trying to bring that potentially into the front line in terms of cell survival and epigenetic targeting. The B cell signaling inhibitors, some of the newer ones, parsaclisib and zindelisib, are also being studied as well. Checkpoint inhibitors, PD-1, PD-L1 inhibitors, anti-CD47 antibodies, the bispecific antibodies as well have been a really exciting area. Cellular therapy with CAR T-cell therapy, for which axi-cel is approved in the third line setting. And then trying to incorporate antibody drug conjugates and radioimmunotherapy into this, really to try to think of rationally, or ways to rationally target this disease.
Perfect. And I think you gave us a lot of great information there that kind of flows nicely into my next question, which is just, you know, in your opinion, in maybe 5 or 10 years down the road, what do you think, or where do you think the field of follicular lymphoma will be? And I guess to kind of synthesize that question a little bit better, you know, when we go to the ASH conference in 10 years, you know, what's going to be like the main sticking point with a lot of those presentations for follicular lymphoma? How do you think this field evolves?
Yeah, I think we're going to continue to learn just how complex this disease is. I think we've seen that. And when we think about the divergent clonal evolution that we see within cells, and both within patients, I think there's a lot of heterogeneity, both in time, so the disease, how the disease evolves with subsequent treatments and over time, but also in space. So just having disease behave differently at different sites, or transformation maybe at one site versus others. And so I think that we're going to continue to learn and be able to better understand those, how we can best target those hallmarks of this disease, that being, you know, translocation 1418 BCL2 with BCL2 overexpression, and then also epigenetic dysregulation. And ultimately, I think we have a lot of different targeted agents. And I think as we learn more, we're going to be able to really develop therapies that are going to address the fundamental disease biology. And I think some of it may come with a subset specific approach where, you know, it's not a one size fits all for every patient, and very individualized. Right now, we don't really incorporate, you know, mutational analysis up front when we think about treatment options. You know, a lot of our biomarkers are prognostic in nature. The EZH2 mutation is helpful for understanding which patients might benefit from tazemetostat in the relapse refractory setting, but I think it's still important that we think about their, we may be able to incorporate these into predictive biomarkers and trying to build on that knowledge so we can ultimately identify ways that we can best improve efficacy and minimize toxicity as we try to help patients.
Absolutely. And I think that's a great point to end on. So to wrap things up, is there anything that I haven't asked you regarding your work in the journal or just follicular lymphoma in general that you think is important to emphasize or share here?
Yeah, I think it's important to emphasize the where a lot of these therapies are emerging is in the relapse refractory setting. And again, I think it's what the challenge is trying to identify the best way to treat patients and the sequencing of therapies and again, how it changes the disease biology. But I do also think there's a lot of exciting trials that are out there examining these questions. And a lot of this will take time because this is an indolent lymphoma. And so it takes time to get some of that data, but really trying to incorporate some of those therapies earlier on in the disease process may change the disease biology to, again, improve outcomes for patients with less toxicity. So I think that's something that's important, but also emphasizing how we think about the approach to treatment in the relapse refractory setting and remembering that, always thinking about clinical trials for patients too, because, we're not curing patients with these therapies. We can get long remissions early on, but that's something that's important. And then I also think it's important to think about how, we think about the patient experience in this too. And again, quality of life is so important here. And I think as trials are developing and evolving, they're including more and more of that patient reported outcomes, which I think is really important here.
I think that's a great point to end this on. Well, Kirk, thank you so much for your time and really this great conversation. I really appreciate it. And I'm really excited for our listeners to hear this and to hear you synthesize this piece. I think it was great.
No, thank you for having me.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available. Or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast is the official podcast of Cancer Network, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Cancer Network.